Okay, delighted to have Matthew on the call. I've had a wide range of guests, 125 episodes so far, but Matthew, you're by far probably the most inspirational story and person I've met to date. Can you give us a bit of an intro to the listeners who don't know who you are?
Yeah, thanks, Ola. My name is Matthew Bell. I'm an ex-Irish international hockey player and ex-professional hockey player. I used to play professionally in Germany, and upon my third season of starting there, I fell ill with a brain tumor the size of three golf balls in my midbrain, and I had to have emergency surgery because I was a day away from having a brain hemorrhage that would have been fatal, for what I've been told. And then I was flown back to Belfast to start my cancer treatment. And within that time, I had to learn how to talk, walk, and eat again from scratch because I stopped all of those precious life skills during that time period.
When you share that story now, what emotions, how do you feel saying that out loud?
Yeah, I think when you say it out loud, it kind of like you realize that those are quite big milestones. Like I always said, I was like a child in an adult's body, or like a baby in an adult's body back in hospital. But thankfully the NHS staff, the occupational therapists, the physios, the nurses, the doctors, my oncologist, you know, they all worked with me. And thankfully I've been in remission, coming up to 2 years now, and I'm back playing hockey. So yeah, I've a lot to be thankful for.
I always like going back to the very start of the journey of any athlete that I have on or coach. Who or what inspired you to play hockey, Matthew? Who was the person to kind of get you involved?
I think I had a hockey stick in my hand before I can remember. My dad was a player. My granddad was a player for Banbridge Hockey Club, where I play now and where I played before moving to Germany. Dad played up to Irish under-21s level. And Granda was an ex-president of the club as well. So it runs in the family, and my mum played and my sister plays still. So it's definitely a big family sport, and Banbridge Hockey Club is a big family club as well.
Very good. And when for underage for you, obviously your family is so steeped in the sport, and you've had 100 caps for Ireland, you've gone to the World Cup. When did you start to notice a bit of talent or a bit of success at underage levels and kind of progress onto maybe regionals or international teams?
So I played a couple of games for the Irish under-16s, but I didn't make the final squad for the tournament that year. And the next year, then I worked extra hard and I actually made the under-18s a year early, which then kind of progressed me on. And I played the 18s for a few years and played a few years of under-21s. And after the under-21s, I was drafted into the senior panel for training sessions. And I was in upper sixth at the time. So my final year of school. And then I got my first cap for the senior team, the national team, at the end of my first year of university. So that was a special occasion.
I'd say it's interesting when I speak to elite athletes, a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them speak about maybe an early setback. And that story about the under-16 team kind of resonates with me in terms of you didn't make it and then you worked extra hard and you made the under-18 team. That seems to be, was that kind of the first sort of lesson you learned from sport about resilience and kind of getting back up when you're maybe not selected? And my biggest thing I tell players, a coach Gaelic football, is selection is just an opinion. You know, it doesn't mean you're any less of a player if I don't pick you for my team. But how did you find going through that process and not being selected? And I know obviously when you're a little bit older, you weren't selected for Rio and you went through that again.
Yeah, I think that was a big learning curve for me at that age, because, you know, I'd be playing representative stuff with my county, like with Ulster, and the interpros and things like that. And then it got to the Irish under-16s and I had been playing a couple of matches for them, but then didn't make that. And it was actually a manager of the team said to me, look, his son had went through the same thing and had worked extra hard and made the 18s the next year. So kind of put that thought into my head, and, you know, it happened. And as you said about Rio, that's one of the worst days of my life, was reading that email to say that I wasn't selected. That definitely helped with the resilience side of things and helped me push me on to the next level, because I said, like, that wasn't going to happen again and I'd have to work extra hard to get myself to the next level to make sure that didn't happen again. So yeah, disappointments are big in elite sport and professional sport, but they're more than likely going to happen, and it's how you deal with those. Definitely, it's down to a positive mental attitude, I always said. as something I think you get as an international professional sports person, and something you have to have as well if you want to succeed at the sport.
I always love asking guests about their interpretation of certain words or terms. When I look at the word resilience, your story really springs to mind. How, what does the word resilience mean to you, and how has that evolved over the last couple of years?
I think resilience for me, like I would define it as like just keep going. Like if you're in a bad playing phase, you know, if your form is not the what it used to be, you just need to keep playing to like your strengths and just be resilient in that aspect, and that you keep fighting, I guess, in a way. And you know, obviously having been through cancer treatment and having to learn to walk, talk, and eat again, I had to be resilient through those two tough months of my life. So yeah, I guess that's what I would say resilience is.
Who would be in your corner when you go through those days where you need someone, like I've people, family and friends, but other mentors, like maybe mentor is not the right word, like that I can ring and just cry to and give out to, or to just have a listening ear? Who would be in your corner in terms of sport and life, and who do you rely on in those moments?
Definitely family and friends. Something I've said ever since leaving hospital is that the kindness and love I was shown by family and friends, I can never repay back. And before I fell ill, maybe I took them for granted, but I definitely won't take them for granted again because of how they treated me in my time. Like I had visitors every day in hospital. I was in hospital, I was in Belfast in hospital for 4 months, and I had visitors every day, which obviously makes your time lying in a hospital bed not really doing much a lot easier. So yeah, definitely family and friends, I'd say.
Brilliant. Would you obviously this all kind of happened in Germany when you started getting symptoms. You were actually signed with a team in Belgium, was it, before, and you went back to Germany, was it?
Yeah, so I played 2 seasons in Germany, and at the end of my second season, I decided to try and play in a different league, just to see what the style of hockey was like. But the start of the summer of 2019, my granda was ill and passed away. And it was around that time that I was experiencing migraines and waking up with vomiting. And a couple of months I was still playing for the national team, but my form really dropped. And I'd signed for KHC Dragons over in Belgium, one of the top clubs in European hockey. And I was with them and trained a few times and played a practice match. And they sent me back to Germany because I wasn't the type of player that they had heard about or expected. And sending me back to Germany probably saved my life. I went back to Germany and I had 2 dizzy spells within a week, one on a Sunday and one on a Thursday. And my manager got me an MRI scan for the next day, which was Friday the 13th of September, if you're superstitious or not. And then they told me you have a brain tumor the size of 3 golf balls, and you need to have emergency surgery to release the pressure because you're a day away from having a brain hemorrhage. And from where the tumor was in my head, if I did have that hemorrhage, I wouldn't be standing here today.
What goes through your head when they tell you that? Is it, well, you're 25, professional athlete, for anyone to hear it, but for someone in the peak of their powers and as a professional athlete, what was that like?
Yeah, thankfully I don't remember it. There's 6 months of my life that I don't remember, and it's a blessing in disguise probably that I don't remember those months. Like being told you've a brain tumor and then you're told you've got cancer. Like, think being told you've got cancer is probably one of the worst things you can be told. But thankfully, my surgeon over in Germany, he said I was always curable, and my oncologist said I was always curable. And you know, thankfully now I could say that. I'm cancer free, which is obviously a good thing to say, and I'm back on a hockey pitch, which is all I ever wanted. You know, lying in that hospital bed, there was many days that I didn't think I'd ever be back on the pitch. And 1 year after my diagnosis, I got my dad to take me to the hockey pitch, and I ran 2 lengths. And after I did that, he said to me he didn't think he'd ever see me run again, which, going from a professional international hockey player to land in the hospital bed and hit your dad saying, like, I don't think I'd ever see you run again. It was quite a tough thing to hear. But I said to him, I was like, yeah, I've ran today, but you'll see me play a hockey match again. And now I'm under my second season with one of the teams in Banbridge. So
Amazing. What was the last thing you remember, Matthew? I'm interested. When you lost the 6 months of memory, was that from the dizzy spells? And did you have to kind of, is your story, did you have to piece it together through people telling you kind of what happened?
Yeah, so my grandma passed away in June of 2019, and I don't have any memory of that. And my memory comes back when I was starting my cancer treatment in the city hospital in Belfast, which was October, November time of that year. I remember the two dizzy spells in Germany, and I remember their ambulance home. So I guess those are kind of like the key events. And I've very vague memories of those, but there I do have a little memory of those. But the rest of it is completely like I don't remember being in Belgium with dragons. I don't remember being back in Germany apart from the two dizzy spells. So yeah, it was a strange one.
When your family, obviously your family went over to Germany, and I heard they arrived 10 minutes after you went for surgery, and couldn't see it till after the next day. When your memory comes back and you meet them in hospital, and you had that story about your dad, you obviously value family and friends. When did that really hit home for you? Was it when you came back to Belfast?
Yeah, as I said, I don't remember my time in Germany, but like my parents were there. They flew over because they were told I would only be there for 1 week. But it turned out to be 6 weeks. And dad actually flew home with me in their ambulance, my mum's best friend. Sorry, the surgeon said I wasn't well enough to fly home in a commercial flight. And my mum's best friend was very high up in the NHS in Belfast, and she actually flew over and helped organise an ambulance home for me. And dad flew home with me and traveled in the ambulance from the air ambulance to the hospital. And my parents were with me every day in hospital. And yeah, that's the kind of those memories that I have at the moment. And you know, me, I didn't speak for 7 weeks, and it wasn't until my dad came down to my hospital room and pulled up a chair beside me, and he said, "I know you can speak. You know you can speak. So pull your finger out and start speaking." And it was after that that I then, my sister came down later that day with her husband, and I said a faint hello to them. And the next morning, the nurses came in every morning. They were saying, "Hi, Matthew, good morning, how are you?" And I never responded to them. And then that morning, I said, "Hey, I'm great, thanks." And they went outside the room and cried, saying, he's speaking again.
Wow. And I know there's a story, whether it was a nurse or a healthcare assistant that said, when you arrive to hospital that he'll come out skipping here or dancing out of that or dancing out of the hospital. Was that for you, your mentality as an athlete and that resilience that we spoke about, not being picked and all these lessons you've learned from sport, was that mentality brought across into your own recovery of that resilience and, you know, even defying all the odds of not being able to walk and, you know, you weren't able to talk and you've learned all these amazing life skills back, or not amazing, they're day-to-day life skills. We now have this amazing journey of back to playing hockey. Is that attributed from your sporting career?
Yeah, definitely. As I said before, being an international sports star, or not a star, but a sports person and a professional sports person, you have to have that positive mental attitude and be resilient. You're going to have knockdowns in sport, not getting selected for a team. And that definitely, as I said before, you know, not getting selected for Rio definitely ingrained that into my head. And going through those tough days in hospital where I wasn't sure if I was ever going to walk again or get back onto the hockey pitch, you just had to remind yourself, you know, you're a positive person, you're a resilient person, you're going to get through this. You've been through a lot already, but you'll get through this. So yeah, that's definitely something that played in my back of my mind.
I know there was a, whenever I speak to athletes and it's, or anyone, you always hear of maybe someone that they found inspiration or they found as an inspiring story online. And for real, I saw online there's a police officer that you got in contact with and she had a, was it a brainstem stroke?
Yeah. So whenever I was going through after I finished my radiotherapy, I was very tired and was just lying about the house and not really doing too much. And I watched a YouTube video of Clodagh, and I couldn't get over how similar our recoveries were from the brainstem stroke to, you know, my injury. And I saw she had a book out, so I messaged her on Instagram and she sent me the book, and I read it in 2 days. I couldn't set it down because I couldn't believe how similar our stories were. And then that made me want to document my own recovery in the book, which you mentioned, you know, before at the start. So that book's now out, and the proceeds are going to Friends of the Cancer Centre, where I stayed in hospital for 4 months as an inpatient for my cancer treatment. So if the book can benefit them in any way, and if it can benefit any person that reads it, then it's a positive thing.
Have you had anyone reach out, whether maybe not a similar story, but has there anyone reached out to you about your recovery and gotten advice or just reached out to kind of get in touch about your own story, like the way you did with Clodagh?
Yeah, like whenever after the lockdowns in Northern Ireland, BBC Sport came out and did an interview with me after I finished my treatment. And in that interview, I said, you know, I want to be back playing international hockey and to go to the, you know, the Olympics in Paris. Because I was in hospital when Ireland played in the qualifier, and they didn't qualify for Tokyo. And that video, I got, I don't know how many responses into my inbox and Facebook and Instagram, people saying they'd cried at the video, and you know they couldn't. It was just such a strong story that they were just asking me like, how did I get through that? And I just said, yeah, it's down to being positive, and I'm lucky to have a positive family behind me. Like I said, I was in a wheelchair for 2 months. I was on a rollator for 6 weeks, and I was on a single crutch for 6 weeks. And it wasn't until the last week of my radiotherapy that my mom and dad said to me, "Matt, they took the crutch off me, and they said you're walking in and out as if everything's back to normal." And I did, and that was the end of my walking aids and back to, I guess, a bit more normality. But again, that's down to my parents pushing me, and they knew when to push me, and they knew not when to push me. So I can never thank them for that either. That's the support they've shown me over the last couple of years has been amazing.
I love their style of your dad saying, "Come on, just get talking," and they pull the crutch away. It's a bit of tough love there, is there, Matthew?
Yeah, definitely tough love, but I think it's what I needed.
Brilliant. And there's a great video of you being back on the pitch for the first time as well. What's that like going back out there? Do you remember the emotions of that day?
Yeah, I remember waking up that morning, and it was a match for the fifth 11 for our club. And I remember waking up that morning nervous for the match, and playing in the World Cup for Ireland, I wasn't nervous, but playing for the fifth 11 at Banbridge, I was nervous, and I just found that quite funny. But yeah, it was a very emotional day. Once the final whistle went, you know, there was a lot of hugs and a lot of tears. But BBC Sport were down to do an interview after the match, so I kind of had to put it together to stop the tears for the TV camera.
That's interesting. How come, why wouldn't you have been nervous for the World Cup when, you know, that's the World Cup, it's the biggest stage for the sport. It's, you know, you, after all those setbacks you've been through it at underage levels, why weren't you nervous for that?
I honestly don't know. I think I was just so comfortable playing at that level, and we'd trained so hard, and we knew what we needed to do. So I was just happy to be on the pitch playing. Like I can't say I would have been nervous for my first few caps with the national team, but once I kind of got into the swing of things, nerves weren't really a massive thing, but they're a good thing to have. But yeah, then for that fifth 11 match, I was really nervous, and I think it was just being back on the pitch again because I knew I wasn't anywhere near the type or the kind of player that I was before I fell ill. But yeah, it was a few tears after that match.
How do you find it as a competitor, trying to take away, it's kind of a harsh question, but trying to take away that human side of the story as a competitor and someone, like I know the motivation and drive it takes to be an elite athlete and professional athlete, but to go from those amazing heights to now playing local league, does it frustrate you that you aren't the player you once were, or how do you deal with that? Obviously, I'm just blocking out the kind of human side of the story, but from your mentality as a competitor, how do you find it?
Yeah, so I'm starting my second season now with the third 11. So I played one match and then a full season for the thirds, and now I'm continuing with the thirds. Yeah, it took me a while to kind of get over that I wasn't the player that I used to be, and I always had aspirations, you know, to go to the Olympics after the heartbreak of Rio, and it did take me a long time to come over that. But now I realize that I'm doing a lot more coaching now because I have that kind of knowledge that I can impart on the other members in the hockey club and the youngsters and give them advice and where they can improve. And if I can benefit the club or the sport in that way, then that's also a good thing.
Brilliant, fair play. How do you find coaching? Is it frustrating or is it enjoyable or how do you like it?
Yeah, no, I'm enjoying coaching more than I am playing at the moment because playing's still very frustrating, but no, it's I'm enjoying it, yeah.
Good stuff. You're inspiring the next generation of hockey players. It's a good way to look at it. I'm interested as well with the book. You obviously said reading Clodagh's story was kind of, did you know from that moment you were going to write the book and did you start making notes and how did you kind of come to the whole, how did you structure it? How did you kind of put it all together?
Yeah, after reading that, it just made me want to document my recovery because over the time of my recovery, there's a lot of people have said it's inspirational and things like that. And to be honest, I don't see it as inspirational. I see it as just someone getting over an illness and getting back to the sport they love. But if it could, as I said, if it can help one person going through something difficult in their life, or as I said, if it can benefit the charity from the proceeds of the book, then that's also a positive thing.
When your dad said it to you about not being able to run again, were you always thinking, I want to go back, I want to play? Like, when did it actually kind of hit you that this could be a reality of getting back in the pitch? Or was it ever not a reality for you?
I don't know. I always knew I would play a match. I just didn't know what level it would be at. But it was the last match of the season for the Fits. And I actually, whenever I finished my radiotherapy in 2020, I said to my dad, I wanted to play a match by the end of the season. And he said to me, you're being too ambitious. Like, it's far too soon. I hadn't even ran unaided at that point. We're still on a treadmill holding onto the sides. And I thought to myself, you know, I'll show him I'm going to get a match in by the end of the season. And it wasn't it wasn't until a couple of years after that that I actually did get back on the pitch. I trained lots and lots, and I couldn't. The first day I trained, I came home and cried because I was back on the pitch. And the second day I trained, I came home and cried because I was so bad. And it did take a while to get over it, but I have come to the realization now that I'll not play at that level again, but it doesn't mean I'm not going to stop dreaming about that.
I saw the Instagram caption. I was laughing at it. I'll never complain about having to run again. I'll do all the sprints and all the running I ever have to do. I've kind of paraphrased it there. Is that now you're grateful for all these running and fitness sessions, Matthew? Is it?
Yeah, I kind of regret saying that now, but no, as I said, my dad said to me that he'd ever see me run again. And no matter if I have to run playing a hockey match, I'll always be happy and feel very lucky that I can do that after being in a wheelchair for so long, needing someone to push me around, and you know, needing my parents to bring me somewhere and push me around if I need to go somewhere. Like, that's not something that I'm always on the move. I never like laying about doing nothing. And I'm very impatient, so yeah, it's something I'll not take for granted again.
How do you look back or interpret this period of your life from 2019 to now? Is it, how do you interpret it or kind of rationalize it in your head?
It's a difficult question because, like, I've been told I was literally one day away from not being here. So in a way, I'm always thankful for that. And that's why the book is called Second Chances, because I'm thankful for my second chance. I was told if I was in Belgium or in Belfast, I wouldn't have had that emergency surgery. My dad always said to me, you're in the right place at the right time. And being back in Germany was being in the right place at the right time. Back to I call them my second family, my second home, Germany, Krefeld. And yeah, I think just probably thankful would be how I would say over the last couple of years.
Would you very much still identify yourself as an athlete, or how is your, what I mean as an athlete, is it's an elite athlete? And I get the sense that before all of this, when you are an elite athlete and you're at it playing at such a high level, your whole life is encompassed by playing hockey and this thing. But how do you now interpret your identity, and how has it shifted, or are you very much still in the same, a similar mindset?
No, I think before I fell ill, I always would have said hockey was the biggest thing in my life. It was the be all and end all, and it was all I wanted to do. And you know, as I said, I was playing for a living, so I didn't see it changing from that. Obviously, the sport, you know, you're going to get older, and you're not going to be able to play at the same level, so you're going to have to find something else to do. When I was studying my degree, I had offers to go play abroad, and my mum said to me, like, "No, you're not. You're staying at home and finishing your degree." And I don't like saying it, but she was right. Because if I didn't have that degree to fall back on, I wouldn't be where I am now, you know, with the job and having something to fall back on. So I guess in a way, I'm also thankful for that piece of advice from mum.
I sense a bit of stubbornness, Matthew. I think that's the reason for success in this story. I always love asking this question, and I kind of turn this into two parts for you. How is your what is your definition of success now, and how has that potentially evolved from the, let's say, 10 years ago? Maybe not 10 years ago, that's a bad time. Like 5 years ago. How has that evolved for you?
Yeah, I said 5 years ago, success to me would have been like winning a hockey match, or winning week in, week out in your hockey and making small increments and small gains in your performance. Whereas, what would success be now? Yeah, that's a difficult question. I guess it's, you kind of take the tie overs from sport to life, and with sport, you make your small goals and you tick them off as you complete them. It's the same thing with life, I would say, is that small, if it's regards to work or if it's regards to like personal life, things like that, you just make your small goals and tick them off. Like I define those as small successes. So yes, that's what I would say.
Brilliant. I'm going to move on to what's called the Sideline 7. It's the same 7 questions at the end of every episode. And as I read this out, I realise I never sent you the questions, so I'm a terrible host. I usually try to give the guests a bit of a heads up. So I'm going to start with question 1, Matthew. You can take your time.
Thanks for giving me a heads up.
Yeah. I actually feel terrible now. I completely forgot. Question 1, Matthew. What's your favourite quote?
Favorite quote. Focus on the comeback, not the setback.
I feel that was someone told you that during your recovery. I remember that from an Instagram post.
One of the journalists I did a interview for, she said that that was the title of the on in newspaper. It said, "Focus on the comeback, not the setback." And I thought that's a great motto to have.
Okay, very good. Question 2, what's the best sporting event you've been to? And you can pick one as a fan and one as a player.
Player would be the World Cup in 2018. As a fan, Arsenal against Norwich, and when I went to see them in Highbury, I think I was about 12 years old and saw Thierry Henry score a hat trick. So that's definitely the one to watch.
Okay, is there any particular sporting event in your bucket list? Maybe something non-hockey, Super Bowl, that seems to be people's favourite.
No, I'd like to see a basketball game live, like an NBA game live. I think that's what I'd like to go see.
They're like a show. It's actually not about the basketball when you go to them. It's more about everything else that happens at the game. Will you buy tickets to go to Paris for next year?
Depends. If Ireland qualify, then I'll definitely look to go over and watch support them. If they don't, then I don't know. It's difficult.
Maybe not.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good. Question 3. I know the answer to this one. What's been the biggest setback or challenge so far in your career, and how did you react to it?
Yeah, probably the brain cancer or the select the well, initially I say would have said the not getting selected for Rio, but then definitely the brain cancer diagnosis.
Question 4. The flip side then. I think I know the answer to this. What's your biggest achievement on or off the pitch?
On the pitch is European bronze medal in 2015 and representing Ireland at the World Cup in 2018. Off the pitch, biggest achievement, probably getting engaged over the summer.
Very good, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
The question I love asking, not part of the Sideline 7, but for the first anthem you ever, first time you ever played for Ireland, hearing the anthem, did you cry? Yes or no?
Didn't cry, no, just got goosebumps.
Okay. And does anything compare to representing your country and listening to the anthem?
Difficult question. Sporting wise, no, obviously not. That's the pinnacle of your sporting career is representing your country. So I can't really give you an answer to that one. It's difficult.
That's fair enough. I love asking really difficult questions, but Matthew, if you could go back in time and give advice to your 18-year-old self, and maybe set the context for us as well. You were kind of maybe going into the senior team at the time, you're still in last year of school. What advice would you give your 18-year-old self?
Work harder.
Carter, very good. Who would be your dream dinner guest and why? And you can open up the table to a few people if you want.
I actually don't know. That's a difficult question.
Again, I should have given you a heads up, so that's my fault.
Yeah. Can I pass? I actually
You
can't.
can pass if you want.
Yeah, I
You can
can't.
pass if you want. Most people do cheat. They like giving me about 6 people. So I'll move on to the final question, which ties into the whole podcast. If your life was a book, what chapter would this be called?
My life is a book. What chapter would this be called? Can I just call it the title of my book?
You can.
My second chance.
Very good. For anyone listening and wants to get in touch or buy the book, where is the best place? Where is the best place to do that?
It's on pre-sale at the moment at Excalibur Press. I can send you the link, sure, and you can do your magic.
Yeah, I can pop it in the. I'll put it in the description box below, and I'll be sure to share it on all my social platforms as well, and I'll link your own page as well if anyone wants to get in touch.
Yeah, it's on my social page as well. Like all the links are there on my Instagram bio and things like that. So
Perfect. I'll let people know that it's there. Matthew, thanks a million for your time. I really appreciate you coming on, and I just want to wish you the best of luck with everything, with the engagement, with the wedding, with everything hockey and everything else. And thanks again for your time.
Thanks, Orla.